Well, this week, Chutz La'aretz finally catches up with Eretz Yisrael. It's safe to say, if I may paraphrase a British member of parliament, that Chutz La'aretz is, as of this week, is no longer an island. And we have Parshas Maaseh, they have Matos Maaseh, and we're all together again, Chaverim Kol Yisrael. So for us, we focus on the Parsha of Maaseh, which begins, as we know, by detailing and naming all of the places where we encamped and traveled on our journey from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael. 42 in total, the Membeis Masos. And let us take a look at a pasuk in the beginning of the Parsha, which is in Pasuk Gimel. Vayusumi Ramses, that's our first journey. Vayusumi Ramses Bechodesh HaRishon. Bechamisha Asayom Lechodesh HaRishon. So we traveled, of course, Pesach, the 15th of the first month, the 15th of Nisan. Mimachras HaPesach Yatzu B'nei Yisrael B'yad Ramah Le'enei Kol Mitzrayim. On the morrow of the Pesach itself, B'nei Yisrael left B'yad Ramah in high spirits, in plain view of all of Mitzrayim. Unkelus translates the word Yad Ramah as Reish Galei, with an open head, revealed head. It's the idiom within Unkelus that's the translation of Yad Ramah, because it represents not so much a position of the part of the body, but a mood that the Yisrael are in high spirits. Then Pasuk Dalet states, Umitzrayim mikabrim Esa Shehika Hashem Bahem Kol Bechor. Mitzrayim were burying the firstborn that had been smitten by Hashem. Uvelohehem Asa Hashem Shvatim, and Hashem administered justice to their deities. What's interesting about this pasuk is that Maaseh is largely, totally in fact, a retrospect, in the sense that this is not the time to describe aspects of Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is a time to talk about the journey from Mitzrayim, which means it's very interesting that within the journeys, the Torah mentions this element of Mitzrayim burying their dead as B'nai Yisrael left Mitzrayim, for this is something that wasn't mentioned at the time. Parshas Bo, we left. So it's certainly noteworthy that so far into the Chumash, where really we're focusing on just the locations, there's an aspect of Yetzias Mitzrayim itself which is mentioned, which was not spoken about at the time. And that's an interesting shaila. What does Mitzrayim Mikabrim, the burial of the Bechorei Mitzrayim, have to do with the 42 Masos? And if they weren't buried then, there'd be 43 or 41? That's a question that we will need to consider. I'd like to, by way of preface, direct our attention to a very interesting situation, for it is a Tosfos in Maseches Kiddushin and Daf Lamed Zayin, and Tosfos begin and actually deal with a kasha of the Ibn Ezra. I think that's quite a rare thing. Normally you have the Ibn Ezra's Perush on the Torah, you have the Tosfos's Perush on the Gemara, and as far as we know, never the twain shall meet. And yet, the Tosfos, well familiar with the Ibn Ezra, see it appropriate to quote one of his questions within the context of their Perush on the Shas. What is the issue being discussed there? Well, Ibn Ezra poses what seems to be a contradiction between two psukim, specifically as they relate to the term Mimachras HaPesach, the morrow of the Pesach. That's a phrase that we met in our Pasuk, in Pasuk Gimel, and it is also a phrase that features in Sefer Yehoshua. In Perikei of Sefer Yehoshua, where it describes the first Pesach, really, of B'nai Yisrael in Mitzrayim, which is just a few days after we came, in Eretz Canaan, Eretz Yisrael, a few days after we crossed the Yarden, we crossed on the 10th of Nisan, and then 4 days later, Pesach. And the Pasuk describes, this is in Perek Hey, Pasuk Yud, Vayachanu v'nei Yisrael ba-Gilgal, we encamped in Gilgal, that was our first location, Vayasu es ha-Pesach, and offered the Korban Pesach, ba-Avar, sayom, la-Chodesh, ba-Erev, ba-Avos Yericho, and on the 14th, towards the evening, in the afternoon, we offered the Korban Pesach. That's the Korban. Then, the next Pasuk describes what we ate. Vayochlu me'avor ha'aretz mimacharas ha-Pesach, and then Bnei Yisrael ate from the produce of the land mimacharas ha-Pesach, from the morrow of the Pesach, matzos v'kaloi be'etzem hayom hazeh. What is the point of the Pasuk telling us that we ate from the produce of the land mimacharas ha-Pesach? Did we not eat from the produce of the land prior to that? What's the significance of that date? Well, as the Gemara itself explains, the reference here is to an issue that became of the essence when we came to Eretz Yisrael, namely the issue of Chadosh. The Torah tells us in Parshas Emor that one cannot eat from the new crop of the land until the Korban Omer has been brought. Lechem mekali becharmel lo tochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh ad aviyachem es omer hatnufa. So until we bring the Korban Omer, which is brought on the 16th of Nisan, you can't eat from the produce of that year's crop. And that was the produce that was available. And that's what the Pasuk is telling us, that Bnei Yisrael, they only were able to eat from the produce of the land, Mimachras HaPesach, from the time that they brought the Korban Omer. The only problem is, we seem to have something of a discrepancy in terms of what date we're referring to with the words Machras HaPesach. In our Pasuk in Masei, where we left Mitzrayim on the 15th of Nisan, as the 15th of Nisan is called Machras HaPesach, apparently, if that's the morrow of the Pesach, then Pesach is the 14th. Why would the 14th be called Pesach? Because the 14th of Nisan is the day that we bring the Korban Pesach. Okay, so be it. So Pesach is the 14th, Machras HaPesach is the 15th, as per Parshas Maaseh. Yet, when we come to that other Pasuk in Yehoshua, which talks about eating from the produce of the land, Chadosh, on Machras HaPesach, and we know that you can't eat from the new produce until the 16th, so apparently the 16th is the Machras HaPesach, which means that the 15th is the Pesach. Apparently, the Pesach as a date refers to when we eat the Korban Pesach, which is on the 15th. So in a sense, that is where we are, stuck. Because we have two references to Machras HaPesach, and they seem to be referring to two different calendar dates. That is the question of the Ibn Ezra, and Tosfos rise to the challenge. And Tosfos actually suggest two answers, one from Rabbeinu Yitzchak of the Tosfos, and one from Rabbeinu Tam of the Baalei Tosfos. Rabbeinu Yitzchak says, a chiddush, which is the least of our concerns, and whatever we say will be a chiddush, so that we don't have to worry about that. Rabbi Yitzchak says that actually there is an interesting concept at play here, principle at play. And he's using an idea mentioned in the Gemara, and as we will see, extends it quite boldly. The Gemara states in a number of places, in Maseches Chulin, in Maseches Avodah Zarah, that sometimes between the way the Torah expresses itself and the way Chachamim express themselves, there can be a difference. They can use the same word, but they use it differently. It's a shift in usage, in terminology, in lexicon, in vernacular. In the words of the Gemara, Loshon Torah la'atzma, v'loshon Chachamim la'atzma. The Torah talks about things in a certain way, the Chachamim speak about things in a certain way, which means whenever you hear a word, you just need to know who said it, because it could make a difference. Okay, and there's all sorts of discussions about why that would be. Was it deliberate? Was it programmatic? But that is something that is established by the Gemara. And now enter Rabbeinu Yitzchak of the Tosfos, and says a chiddush. And that is, not only is there a difference in terminology between the way the Torah refers to things and the way Chachamim refer to things, but even within Torah Shebichtav, there is a difference between how the Torah talks about things and how the Navi talks about things. Navi is Torah Shebichtav, but it's not Chumash. It's an entity unto itself, and therefore, as surely, in his words, as we say, Lashon Torah la'atma, and Lashon Chachamim la'atma, we also say, Lashon Nevi'im la'atma. And with this, says Rabbeinu Yitzchak, do not be alarmed if you see the very same expression, Machras HaPesach, in the Torah and in the Navi, and it refers to two different dates, because these are two different modes of expression. The Torah refers to the Machras HaPesach as the 15th, as we saw, and the Navi refers to it as the 16th. That is quite a thing to say. But the good news is, it's Rabbeinu Yitzchak Balei HaTosfos who said it. So that's his approach. See, so there isn't really room to speak of a contradiction, per se. It's merely two different usages, as he said. Rabbeinu Tam, who prefers to see homogeny within the Tanakh, certainly Torah and the Nevi'im, says, in his understanding, there is no contradiction. Both psukim are talking about the same date. Both the Torah and the pasuk in Yoshua, when they use the expression Machras HaPesach, are talking about the 15th of Nisan. Now, that works out much easier in one of the cases than the other. It's a good fit for Parshas Maaseh, because we left on the 15th of Nisan, and that's called Machras HaPesach. That's the easier fit. But what about the pasuk in Yeshua? I mean, the pasuk is talking about Chodesh. Chodesh isn't permissible until the 6th of Nisan. And it says they ate from the produce of the land. Mimachras HaPesach. Sounds like it's the 16th. Says Rabbeinu Tam, no. The point of the pasuk is that they couldn't eat from the new produce until the 16th. But the pasuk isn't talking about the first time they could eat from the new produce. It's talking about the last day they could eat from the old produce. And the result is the same. When it says Vayochlu me'avur ha'aretz, they ate from the produce of the land, mimachras ha'pesach, what it means is, up until the day of Machras HaPesach, they were still only able to eat from the old crop, not yet from the new crop, because the Omer had not yet been brought. It's not the 16th, it's still the 15th, Machras HaPesach. So this is Rabbeinu Tam's way of looking at that pasuk. Again, when it speaks about them eating from the produce of the land, it is about Chodesh, but it doesn't denote the first day they could eat from the new crop. It's the final day they could yet only eat from the old crop, Machras HaPesach, otherwise known to us as the 15th of Nisan. And interestingly, this explanation of that pasuk is supported by the Radak in his Perush to Yehoshua, and he explains that that's the connotation of the word Me'avur Ha'aretz. It's a very unusual expression. It doesn't say Ve'yochlu Mitavuas Ha'aretz, or whatever we may have thought more intuitive. Me'avur Ha'aretz, the connotation of Avur, says Radak, derives from the word Avar, the past. It's from the previous year's crop that they ate from on the 15th, because Chodesh was not yet Mutter. So these are the two classic answers of the Balei HaTosfos to the Ibn Ezra's question. And lest we think that the gate of answers has been closed, it has not. And even after the Balei HaTosfos, there were yet Gedolim who are on the case here. And I came across this year a fascinating approach to this question, from the Shelus Tshuvos Tzur Yaakov. It's a sefer that I saw quoted. His name is Rav Yaakov Horowitz. I don't know much about him, but I think his answer will speak for itself, certainly for our purposes. And I'd like to preface with a question that he doesn't raise, but I think it's a worthy question. Let's come back to Pasuk Gimel of our Parsha, which states, Vayis'u me'Ramses b'chodesh harishon b'chamisha asar l'chodesh harishon. Traveled from Ramses, the first month, 15th of the first month. Interestingly, the words B'chodesh HaRishon are mentioned twice. Okay, not sure why that is. But then the second half of the pasuk, Mimachras haPesach Yatzu b'nei Yisrael b'yadrama le'inei kometai. We left Mitzrayim Mimachras haPesach, and my question is a simple one: what is the meaning of the term Machras haPesach? When does it refer to? Well, that might depend who you ask, and it's a bit of an open question. But my question rather is, why does the Torah at all give us this reference of Machras haPesach when it's already told us the calendar date in the first half of the Pasuk? In the other instances, the Torah referred to Machras haPesach and didn't tell you what date of the month it was. In those cases, it chose to timestamp the matter and tell you when it was with reference to Pesach as opposed to the calendar date. So be it. That's the Pasuk in Yeshua, the Eid, Machras haPesach. Which date? Work it out. It should be evident, hopefully. And therefore, in our pasuk, the matter becomes all the more difficult, because why are you giving me a reference from which I can infer when it was, when the first half of the pasuk told me explicitly when it was? 15th of Nisan. So the pasuk begins, "B'chamisha asar lechodesh harishon," and then the pasuk goes on to say, and you know when they left? "Mimachras haPesach." And when is that? Well, I could work it out. How? By looking at the first half of the pasuk, which told me they left on the 15th of Nisan. So it really seems to be the entire phrase, the second half of the pasuk, one could almost say seems to have been stated already. That's a shaila. And that's really the subtext of the Tzur Yaakov. Because he maintains that the second half of this pasuk Gimel is not a repetition. And it is not a reiteration. It is not restating what was said in the first half of the pasuk, because it is not talking about the journey from Ramses referred to in the first half of the pasuk. Rather, it is talking about the second journey. If we take a look in pasuk Hey, Vayis'u v'nei Yisrael me Ramses vayachanu b'sukos. That was the first journey. And the second journey is Vayis'u misukos vayachanu b'esom asher b'ktzeh hamidbar. And the Tzur Yaakov explains that the two halves of the pasuk are referring to two successive journeys. V'chodesh harishon b'chamish asar yom is the first journey, Masa number one from Ramses to Sukkos. And the second half of the pasuk is Masa number two, from Sukkos to Esam. But the question is, why would this be? Well, let's go back to pasuk Dalet, which is strategically placed here in the middle, which tells us something we were not told originally, namely that on the first day of Pesach, what were the Mitzrayim doing on that time? Umitzrayim mekabrim. They were busy burying their firstborn. This isn't just an activity. It was more than that. They weren't only occupied with it. They were preoccupied with it. We should note, and it's a simple point, but the word for burying, we shouldn't know from such things, but the word for burying is kover, kovrim. Here, the pasuk doesn't say umitzrayim kovrim. It's a very simple word. But rather it says umitzrayim mekabrim. What's the difference between kovrim and mekabrim? Well, it's the difference in grammar between the kal and what's called the pl, which is the normal form, and the intensive form. As surely as you can have a word like shavar, but you can also have a word like shiber. Moshe was not shavar es haluchos, who shiber es haluchos. Shiber is more intensive. Shabar means to break. Shiber means to smash. And therefore, the pasuk is telling us not only that they were burying the Bechorim, but that they were intensely involved in it. And that's really the background to Rashi's comment on the words of Mitzrayim Mekabrim, says Rashi, Tirudim be'evlam. They were preoccupied in their mourning. He got that straight from the intensive form of Mekabrim. The question is, what does this have to do with us? Well, says Tzur Yaakov, let us go back to the Bnei Yisrael leaving Biyad Ramah. And the Torah told us also in Chumash Shemos, we left Biyad Ramah. What's the significance of leaving Biyad Ramah, as Unkelus translates, Beresh Galei, in high spirits, with confidence? The point is, as we know, it was very important that the impression should not be given that somehow we stole away from Mitzrayim, as if to say they could have stopped us, but we didn't give them a chance, or such like. No, we left Biyad Ramah, and no one was able to stop us. And that's important, and it's mentioned in the Pasuk. But now there's a simple shaila. Maybe it's not therefore appropriate to leave Mitzrayim itself on the first day of Pesach. And the reason is because, bear in mind, where are the Mitzrayim? Why aren't they stopping us? Well, they could say, Mitzrayim Mikabrim. They were so involved with their Bechorim, they didn't have a cop for anything else, and they didn't notice, and they didn't care. If we would have left the day after, oh, they would have stopped us. And therefore, Mitzrayim Mikabrim is a very important part of the Maseh here, because it affects the timing. That's why, if we go back to Pasuk Gimel, it says Tzur Yaakov, it refers to two separate journeys. Number one, Vayusum Ramses. We left Ramses because we had dislocated from where we were living. But Sukkos is yet part of Mitzrayim. We haven't yet left Mitzrayim. So we're away, but still within reach. Why? The answer is because it had to take place over 2 days, because we didn't want to place ourselves, or Hashem didn't want to place us out of reach and flee the country on day one. Because day one, Mitzrayim have a teretz, Mitzrayim Mekabrim. And therefore, as much as we relocated on day one, we didn't actually leave until day two. And that is referred to in the second half of the Pasuk, which says, Mimachras HaPesach, Yatzu B'nei Yisrael, B'Yad Ramah. Mitzrayim are no longer burying their dead, and they can see us, and they know where we are, and they can't stop us. That's Yad Ramah. So this is an incredible chiddush in Parshanut, really, in this Pasuk Gimel. Never heard anything like this before. And moreover, the benefit here, aside from everything else, is that the Tzur Yaakov has answered Ibn Ezra's kasha in a way that nobody else did. Neither of the two answered Tosos. Namely, once again, the question is, we seem to have a contradiction in the connotation of the words Mimachras HaPesach. In our Parsha Maaseh, it seems Machros HaPesach seems to be the 15th. That's when we left. In Yoshua, it seems to be the 16th. Says the Tzur Yaakov, no, in both places, it's the 16th. Both in Yoshua, of course, they only ate Chodesh from the 16th, and also in Parshas Maaseh, because the reference of Machros HaPesach is not a reiteration of the 15th of Nisan mentioned in the first half of the Pasuk. It's the day after the second journey. That is a Dover Mechudash Ma'od, and I think it certainly deserves a great deal of reflection. Okay, so we've spoken about a little bit concerning the beginning of Parshas Maaseh. I'd like to move and really devote quite some time to a topic that is based, really, if anywhere, its base should be in our Parsha. And that is a mitzvah called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Now, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, it's very easy to talk about it from a variety of different angles. But I'd like to discuss it as a mitzvah, which is important. Sometimes it's a mitzvah that's difficult to talk about. It might depend on a person's point of view. But that is a shame that we should not have to be bound by. There are certain people for whom the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael seemingly does not exist. There are other people, if you talk to them, seemingly no other mitzvah exists. And we have to find the middle path here, which is what the Torah itself is actually saying. And we begin by taking a look at the end of Perek Lamed Gimel, to Pasuk Nun Gimel, and the matter begins with a pure Parshanut Machlokas between Rashi and Ramban, and we need to pay close attention to see why it's a machlokas, because on the face of it, we may miss it. So what does the pasuk say? It's speaking about, of course, Eretz Yisrael, Bnei Yisrael coming into Eretz Yisrael, and then the pasuk says, V'horashtem es ha'aretz v'shavtem ba. Now I'd like to leave the word V'horashtem untranslated just for a moment. Vishavtem ba is very easy to translate. You shall dwell there, settle there. Ki lachem nasati asaretz la reshes osa. Let us see how Rashi explains. The words v'horashtem es haaretz. And these are the two phrases that we'll be considering. Phrase 1, v'horashtem es haaretz. Phrase 2, v'shavtem ba. What does v'horashtem es haaretz mean? Rashi says, v'horashtem osa mi yoshveha. So v'horashtem is from its inhabitants, which means Rashi clearly is understanding that the word l'horish is to dispossess. It's in the causative, and it means that you need to basically get rid of everyone else who is there. That's v'horashtem es haaretz, that's phrase 1. Then, phrase 2, v'oz v'shavtem ba, then v'shavtem ba, says Rashi, tuchlu l'hiskayim ba, then you'll be able to settle there and to remain there. If they're gone, then you'll be able to remain there. V'im lav, posik nun gimel. Of Lamed Gimel. V'im lav, but if you don't dispossess them and they're still around, lo tuchlu l'hiskayim ba, so you won't be able to remain there, you won't be able to endure there, there'll be a constant problem for you, as we know. That's Rashi's comment. And the Ramban opens here the discussion and states, number 1, that this pasuk contains within it a mitzvah asei, one of the 248 positive mitzvahs of the Torah, and that is Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael. But you should know, says Ramban, number 1, the horashtem, taking issue with Rashi, is really from the expression Yerusha, you shall inherit it, meaning come to inherit the land. That's machlokas number 1. Why is it in the causative? Ramban doesn't discuss that. And then v'yishavtem ba, says Ramban, is the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Plain and simple, v'yishavtem ba, mitzvahs aseh. Now, what's interesting is, Ramban then goes on to say, and this is not like Rashi. Well, the way I just explained the pasuk is not the way Rashi explained the pasuk. In what way did Rashi talk about it? Rashi didn't say whether it was a mitzvah one way or the other. Why is Ramban putting himself against Rashi here? Well, as Mefarshim explained, if we watch very carefully, we'll see that Rashi has actually taken the two phrases of the pasuk and shown that they're related to each other. Not so much as mitzvos, but as condition and result. For Rashi says, if you dispossess the people, then you'll be able to remain, implying, if you don't, then you won't. Has a mitzvah been stated here? No. In other words, by putting these two phrases together as really a composite phrase, a complex phrase, so then there are now really two parts to each other, one's the cause and one's the effect, but nowhere is there a command. That's Rashi's approach, and that's why the Ramban says, but I dispute that approach, because in my understanding, these two phrases do not have the relationship of cause and effect. They're not facing towards each other. They're both facing in the same direction, the Jewish people, and their mitzvah sasei, two expressions of the mitzvah, v'rashtem es ha'aretz, inherit the land, v'shavtem ba, and settle the land, and dwell in the land. So we see already from a parshanut point of view, which is of course where it begins, if you're looking to find a source for a mitzvah in the Torah, you've got to identify it as such. Interestingly, there is what you could almost call a subtopic within this general discussion, and that is, if you look through the Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvahs, you will note that he makes no mention of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in the Tariq Mitzvahs. And he talks about the halachas of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in the Mishneh Torah, in Hilchas Melachim, but if we're aware of it, or conscious of it, the mitzvah, and we're looking at the Rambam, and what number of mitzvah does the Rambam codify, the answer is none. He doesn't. And this is something that the Ramban takes issue with the Rambam as well. The Ramban, as we know, has his sefer called Hasogos HaRamban. It's his critical commentary on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos. And not only does the Ramban have a running critique of Sefer HaMitzvos, but at the end of the Rambam's list of Tirat Mitzvos, both the positive and the negative, the Ramban has a list. And he calls that list the Forgotten Mitzvos. And by Forgotten Mitzvos, he means mitzvos that the Rambam forgot to enumerate as part of Taryak, which is his nice way of saying mitzvos that the Rambam should have put in, but it didn't, and he takes issue with the Rambam. And there's a list, I think, the 17 positive mitzvahs. And what's interesting, of course, is there is a conservation of matter here. Everyone agrees that there are Taryag mitzvahs, 613. They may dispute what they are, but everyone is in agreement. In fact, that's the only thing they're in agreement in, that there are 613 mitzvahs, which means if, in your opinion, the Rambam did not mention certain mitzvahs, you must have then a follow-up opinion on the corresponding number of mitzvahs that he did mention that you feel should not have been there because your list should have been there. And indeed, Ramban has a corresponding list of mitzvahs that the Rambam, I guess, forgot to forget and forgot not to put them in because he should have put the Ramban's list in. Okay, and this is the very, it's a serious study, Taryag, and we see how with what gravity the Rishonim related to it, and they're debating every mitzvah. Is it part of Taryag? Even though halachically, sometimes it doesn't always make a difference whether if it's from the Torah, it doesn't make a difference. Is it one of Taryag? But it does make a difference, and there's a whole literature on it, and there's the Sefer Mitzvahs, and there's commentaries, and etc. And sure enough, the Ramban, in his list of forgotten mitzvahs, number 4, lists Mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. The Rambam forgot to put that in, but he should have put it in because it's a mitzvah. And he refers to our pasuk, which is the source of the mitzvah, Vishav Simba. And moreover, there he adduces additional proofs that this is considered to be a mitzvah of Taryak. He quotes a fascinating statement, comment of the Sifrei in Parshas Re'eh. And the Sifrei there says that there's a whole story that leads up to it, but in a sense, the bottom line of what the Sifrei is saying is Yeshivas Eretz Yisrael Shekula Keneged Kol Mitzvah Sheba Torah. Living in Israel is equal in weight to all mitzvahs, or is measured or weighted equivalent to all mitzvahs of the Torah. Now, as we can appreciate, and this is important and self-evident, what the Sifrei does not mean to say is that if a person lives in the land of Israel and doesn't keep any mitzvahs, he is the equivalent of someone who lives in Chutzlars and keeps all the mitzvahs. That's not what it means to say. If a person lives in Eretz Yisrael and doesn't keep any of the mitzvahs, that's a very dire situation. It's not either be in Chutzlars and keep Taryab or Eretz Yisrael, in which case you're fine. Especially as we should not forget, there are at least 7 other mitzvahs about which Chazal have stated that they are equal in mitzvahs in weight to all the other mitzvahs. The Gemara states it in the Nedarim with regards to Mila, the Gemara states it in Shabbos with regards to Tzitzis, and so on and so forth. Now, once that's true, it becomes impossible to take it at face value, because if this mitzvah is equal to all other mitzvahs, that means including the other mitzvahs that are equal to all other mitzvahs, including this one, and so on and so forth, and the mind begins to boggle, and we stray from the point. Clearly what it means is that these mitzvahs, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael among them, add weight to every other mitzvah. That's true. You cannot compare a mitzvah done in Eretz Yisrael to a mitzvah done in Chutz Laaretz. It is enhanced immeasurably. But whatever the understanding of the Sifrei means, the Ramban has this comment to make. Whatever it means that it's equivalent to all the other mitzvahs, there is no way that Chazal would have said that about something, that it's equivalent to other mitzvahs, unless it itself is a mitzvah. Otherwise it's not in the same currency as the other mitzvahs. And therefore, says Ramban, I look at that Sifrei. We can discuss later on exactly what it means that it's Shekula Keneged Kol HaMitzvahs, but one thing's for sure, it wouldn't mean anything if it wasn't a mitzvah. And therefore, says Ramban, further proof of what I'm saying, that it's one of the Taryag mitzvahs. Now, we should note, and we referred to this before, important to note, the Rambam, he didn't list it in the Sefer HaMitzvot, it's not on his list of 613, but there is no question that the Rambam relates to living in Eretz Yisrael as a halachic reality, that is to say, something that one should do, and it's from the Torah. So clearly, it's an interesting situation. It's from the Torah, and it has halachas that relate to it, but it's not one of Taryag. What are we to make of the Rambam's position? Well, in order to provide what I think is a very straightforward understanding of the Rambam, let us preface with a statement of the Gemara, which is in Maseches Sota and Daf Yud Dalet Amud Aleph. Rav Samloi, interestingly, parenthetically, Rav Samloi, who we're about to quote about Eretz Yisrael, was the one in Maseches Makos who told us of the 613 mitzvahs. So clearly it's the same person and it's the same approach. Darash Rav Simloi, Mipnei Manis Ava Moshe Rabbeinu Likanes LeEretz Yisrael. Why did Moshe desire to enter Eretz Yisrael? V'chilechol Mipirya V'lisbo Mituva Hutzarech? Does he just to eat the fruit, or is that it? Which, again, interestingly, is although the Gemara seems to sideline that as something of value, but we talk about it as if it is valuable. In Alamichya, we feel that we would like to do that. But presumably what the Gemara is saying is that can't be it. That can't be the be-all and end-all. It's part of it, but it can't be the be-all. Rather, says Rav Samloi, Ela Omar Moshe, Harba Mitzvah Nastava Yisrael. The Jewish people have been commanded many mitzvahs. The Eino Miskaimus Ela Be'eretz Yisrael. They can only be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael. So Ekanes, I'd like to go in, V'yiskaim Kulan Ayadi, to fulfill all of those mitzvahs. That is Rav Samloi's comment. And if we could summarize, Rav Samloi asked the question, why does Moshe want to go into Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is because there's many mitzvahs that can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael, that only apply to Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he wants to go into Eretz Yisrael to fulfill those mitzvahs. And Mefarshim raised the question. The answer, perhaps, that we would have said, which is so obvious, so much so that the question doesn't even make so much sense to us, but the question was asked and this answer wasn't given. Namely, ask a child, why do you think Moshe wanted to live of all places in Eretz Yisrael? They'll say, because it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. I mean, that's the answer. And the Gemara seemingly just completely overlooked it. And the Gemara says, you know, Eretz Yisrael, there's certain mitzvahs you can only do if you're in Eretz Yisrael. Being in Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. I mean, that's your answer, plain and simple. So why did Rav Samloi not give the straightforward answer to his question? And what indeed was his question? Well, really now, we need to consider two ideas. And the question will be whether they are one and the same, or perhaps two distinct things. There is one idea which is called the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. There is another idea which is called mitzvos hatzlios v'aretz. Mitzvahs that can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael. Trumos, Masvos, Shemitah, Peah, Leket, Shikcha, all the mitzvahs hatzlios v'aretz, the land-based mitzvahs. And the very delicate question that we need to ask is, how are these two mitzvahs related? To the extent that, are they even distinct from each other? Or are they perhaps one leads into the other? As if to say, the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael, is that a distinct mitzvah? It's a separate mitzvah in and of itself, beyond the mitzvahs that one can only do in Eretz Yisrael? Or could it be that this mitzvah in itself is a mavo? We call it a mitzvah in the most general of senses because that's the place to be to fulfill all the other mitzvahs. But it's not its own mitzvah, it's just that's where you should be to fulfill all of these mitzvahs. And interestingly, we will see that Rishonim are divided on this very fundamental question, because of ultimately the question is, what is the measure of the mitzvah that we call living in Eretz Yisrael? You find, on the one hand, The Gemara tells us in Maseches Basra on Daf Tzadik Aleph, and there are halachas about this as well, that it's not always permissible to leave Eretz Yisrael, certainly not to move from Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, perhaps if there's a famine, and that's where it discusses all the Megillas Rus, there was a famine in the land, they left, was that okay, was that not okay? Maybe not okay for them, because they were in positions of prestige and authority, but barring emergencies, one shouldn't leave Eretz Yisrael. Well, why not? The Rashbam, in his commentary to Maseches Bava Basra, explains very simply. Because you don't want to leave Eretz Yisrael. There's a lot of mitzvahs that can only be fulfilled in Eretz Yisrael, so shouldn't leave. And once again, it's a very interesting way of talking about leaving Eretz Yisrael. What's the problem of leaving? Because if you leave, what about all those mitzvahs that you could only do there? And our question is, well, what about the mitzvah of living there that you're not doing if you leave? And it seems, therefore, that the Rashbam takes the approach that what we call the mitzvah of living Eretz Yisrael is none other than a mavo to all of those mitzvahs that can only be performed in Eretz Yisrael. And that they are the problem. And that's why one shouldn't leave, because what about those mitzvahs? And don't say, well, it's a mitzvah to live there to fulfill those mitzvahs, but they are the center of gravity here. However, this position is disputed by one of the great Rishonim, who wrote an entire sefer devoted to matters of Eretz Yisrael, which is called the Kaftor Vaferach. His name was Rabbeinu Eshtori Haparchi, and he's one of the Rishonim, and he states explicitly that the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael is a self-contained mitzvah, independent of the other mitzvahs. As soon as a person lives there, that is already the fulfillment of its own mitzvah. So we see that on this very important question, there are two sides among the Rishonim, and perhaps we could find support for the first approach, namely that it's a mavo, not a self-contained mitzvah, but a mavo to those mitzvahs that one can do in Eretz Yisrael, in the words of Rav Samloy. So says Rav Waldenberg Zatzal in the Shelus Tshuvas Tzitz Eliezer. Rav Waldenberg says, let us come back to consider Rav Samloy's words. He's asking, why does Moshe wish to enter Eretz Yisrael? To eat from the fruit? No. So why then? Because, says the Gemara, Moshe says, there's so many mitzvahs that you can only do in Eretz Yisrael. And our question was, well, being in Eretz Yisrael itself is a mitzvah. Why does Rav Samloy not mention that? However, says the Tzitz Eliezer, it's seemingly what Rav Samloy is saying is, he's not ignoring the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. He's defining the mitzvah of living in Eretz Yisrael. When we say it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, it's because there are so many mitzvahs that can only be fulfilled here. So he's explaining what the mitzvah is all about. But that is the measure of the mitzvah. And indeed, Rav Kook Zatzal, in the introduction to his Sefer Shabbos Ha'aretz, uses this idea to explain, as we close the circle here, to explain the position of the Rambam. The Rambam, who did not codify living in Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah of Taryag mitzvahs, says Rav Kook, is because he understands like the Rashbam, namely that there is no mitzvah per se of living in Eretz Yisrael. When we say it's a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, it's because of the mitzvahs that one can do, and therefore because it leads one to those mitzvahs, those are the mitzvahs that are codified as mitzvahs in Taryag. But living in Eretz Yisrael, which leads you to them, is not itself one of Taryag. That's how Rav Kook explains the Rambam. And indeed, one could potentially see even halachic ramifications of these two approaches. For example, in terms of mitzvahs hatluyos baaretz, truma, maaser, and the like, Eretz Yisrael needed to be, the Kedusha needed to be activated for those mitzvahs to apply. It was activated by the entry of Bnei Yisrael, and that has happened twice in our history. First time in the days of Yoshua, what's called Biyar Rishona, the first entry, and the second time in the days of Ezra, Biyar Shnia, second entry of Bnei Yisrael. And there is a whole special way that it's done, and And those were the two kedushos. But something very interesting happened. It is clear from the Gemara in Maseches Chulin that the map of Eretz Yisrael that was activated for Mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz the second time round was more diminished than the first time round. The first time round, all of Bnei Yisrael came into Eretz Canaan. That's a whole nation. The second time round, much less. And therefore the borders were more modest. Which means that there were certain territories in Eretz Yisrael, to the north and to the south, which were part of the first Kedusha, but not the second Kedusha. Okay, well, at least they're part of the first Kedusha. The point is, the first Kedusha expired. We left the first time round. When Nebuchadnezzar took Bnei Yisrael into Golus, the first Kedusha expired. Kedusha Rishona, Kidsha Leshata, it was only for its time, below La'asit Lava. The second Kedusha was also was more permanent. And therefore, we are aware, and there's details in terms of the map and which territories are where, that's a whole discussion in various sugyas, but the point is principle. We know that there are places to the north and to the south of the center of Eretz Yisrael that were part of the first Kedusha, which was then expired, and never re-sanctified, never reactivated in terms of mitzvos HaTluyos Ba'aretz. And now the question will be, if a person lives in those territories, does he fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? And as we can appreciate, it will depend on our question. If you see the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as essentially live in a place where you can fulfill those mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz, but if for various reasons, even the technical reasons, halachic reasons, those mitzvahs do not apply in that territory, so then if you don't have the mitzvah that living there leads you to, so then living there itself would not be a mitzvah. Which is a radical thing to say. But indeed, that is the opinion of certain Rishonim, Tosfos. However, the Ramban states clearly that these are two separate things. The map, there were two maps of Eretz Yisrael now. Two actual maps. on the one hand, you have the more reduced map of Mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz. There are certain places to the north and the south. Mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz, the Kedusha was never activated the second time round. But the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is not dependent on that Kedusha being activated, and it's not connected to that, and therefore wherever in the actual original Eretz Yisrael a person will live, to the north and to the south, he fully fulfills the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And indeed, we may say and correctly observe, this is the Ramban lishitoso. This is the Ramban consistent with his opinion. The very same Ramban who made a point of listing Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as an independent mitzvah, so that's the Ramban who sees it as independent. It's not subject to, necessarily, to those other mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz, and therefore what there can indeed be the broader map of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and the smaller map, relatively, of mitzvot HaTluyos Ba'aretz. And interestingly, this is a question that reverberated until our times. One would think that the discussion has been had and it's finished. But it wasn't finished. Because the matter relates to what is known as the Heter Mechira in Shemitah. Now, Heter Mechira, which we've discussed at length in the past, and we're not going to go into all of its details, it's a very, very complicated issue. But one of the certainly proponents of the possibility of Heter Mechira was Rav Kook, on a case-by-case basis. He was certainly accepted it to a certain degree and sanctioned it. And one of the opponents was his contemporary, the Ridvaz. The Ridvaz, Rav Yitzhak David Wilovsky, from Slutsk, originally from Slutsk, for a while in Chicago, I believe, and then in the end of his days in Tzfat, a towering halachic figure. And he was an opponent of the Heter Mechira, and he registers many of his issues with the Heter Mechira, and they're all recorded by Rav Kook in his introduction to the Sefer Shabbat Ha'aretz. He gives them full entry and then says what he thinks to respond to them. And one of the objections of the Ridvaz to the Heter Mechira goes to the heart of our question. Namely, says Radvaz, the premise of the Heter Mechira is that you're able to obviate the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael by selling it, assuming the sale is effective, and assuming you're allowed to sell, etc., the sale is effective, and that's how there's no mitzvah of Shemitah anymore, because essentially having changed ownership to non-Jewish hands, it no longer has the that Kedusha, which obligates you in those mitzvahs. Says Radvaz, that could exact a heavy toll, that transaction, because you will have the entire Jewish people over the course of a year bereft of a very important mitzvah called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. You sold it, so then the Kedush has been deactivated, so you're left with the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael without the mitzvah of living there, because the Kedush has been deactivated. That was the objection of the Ritvaz. You've got to take that into account in terms of the pros and cons. Rav Kook quotes the Ritvaz and responds and says, no, that won't happen. And we can see that Rav Kook is, in a sense, like the Rambam, for simplicity's sake, in that he sees these two as being not dependent on each other. The subtotal of what the Heter Mechira will do, if it works, is that it will deactivate the Kedusha in terms of mitzvah tluyas ba'aretz, but it will not touch the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael in terms of the independent mitzvah, which is called Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Even if the Mechira is true, Jewish people will be living in the land of Israel that year, in a land which has no mitzvah tluyas ba'aretz, but it's still Eretz Yisrael, and there's still a mitzvah to live there, per se. And therefore, says Rav Kook, that is not a concern. So we can see how, in a sense, this is a rediscussion of what began in the Rishonim about the very nature of the mitzvah that we call Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Is it dependent and leading you, that's its subtotal, leading you to the mitzvah of the Yisrael Eretz, or independent? What began with the Rashbam and the Kafta Raferach came very close to our time, and perhaps even continues, with the Ritvaz and Rav Kook. What's fascinating to note with regards to the mitzvah is to try and quantify the mitzvah. How does one fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael? And aside from developing the land, which is its own value, and developing all aspects of the country, which is its own value, and from a certain point of view, that aspect of developing Eretz Yisrael can be done even from Chutz La'aretz. If someone supports Eretz Yisrael, they're helping to develop the land. But in terms of the physical presence in Eretz Yisrael, essentially, the question is, what is the mitzvah? Is the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, or is the mitzvah to be in Eretz Yisrael? Now, that sounds like perhaps two ways of saying the same thing, but really the question is the mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael, and if a person lives here, he fulfills the mitzvah. And if he doesn't live here, he doesn't. And even if he visits here, but he doesn't live here, so he's in a good place, but if he's here for a week or two, that is not a week or two of the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Or could it be that no, actually, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is about being here. Of course one should live here, because if you live here, you're here all the time. And therefore you fulfill the mitzvah on an ongoing basis of being here. But according to this approach, even a person who does not currently live in Eretz Yisrael but comes to visit Eretz Yisrael for the time that he's here is fulfilling the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. One could say that the words of the Pasuk V'yishavtim Bo really sounds like it's about living here. But nonetheless, the Magen Avraham, interestingly, in Hilchos Shabbos, raises this question. If a person is in Eretz Yisrael for a short duration of time, a number of days or weeks or whatever, is he fulfilling a mitzvah by being in Eretz Yisrael in that time? And the Magen Avraham quotes two opinions. The question really then becomes, is traveling from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael for a number of days, is that classified as a mitzvah journey? No se'el edvar mitzvah, because that's a halachic category which has a number of ramifications. Interestingly, and just to ponder, if it's true that even being in Eretz Yisrael for a short amount of time, but for the time that you're here, you fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and therefore traveling to here, it constitutes traveling to do a mitzvah of being in Eretz Yisrael for however long you're here, I wonder if there are ramifications with regards to an interesting practice that many people have, namely, when someone goes on a journey, someone else gives them money to give to tzedakah. And why? Because they're shliach l'dvar mitzvah. It's called shliach mitzvah money. Shliach mitzvah in a nizokin, and therefore it's a vouchsafe thing because they're now going to do a mitzvah. It's interesting to consider if a person, if traveling from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael is itself a mitzvah for however long or short the duration, then it should be not necessary for a person to take tzedakah money because he's already going for a mitzvah. In fact, it may even be advisable to refuse to accept tzedakah money on principle because that's almost a bizayon to the mitzvah of coming to Eretz Yisrael that he's due. Perhaps he can take double amount as he goes from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz. That's last way to redress the balance, and I don't wish to in any way interfere with the tzedakah enterprises, which are one can never have too much tzedakah, but nonetheless not to lose sight of the fact that you talk to a person and say, oh, you're going to Eretz Yisrael, I'll give you some money, so then you'll be going to perform a mitzvah, maybe perhaps overlooking the fact that he's actually going to do a mitzvah by being in Eretz Yisrael. Well, the opposite side, pardon me, of the coin here, is if we're asking the question, if being in Eretz Yisrael for a short amount of time, is that a mitzvah? Then what about leaving Eretz Yisrael for a short amount of time? Is that okay or perhaps objectionable? In principle, as we said, one needs very good reason if he's living in Eretz Yisrael to move to Chutz La'aretz. Very good reason, which the halacha defines. But what if a person goes for a short amount of time? One could say it's part of the same question, because if one fulfills the mitzvah of Eretz Yisrael is to live here, then even if you go for a short amount of time, but you still live here, that's not compromising the mitzvah. But if the mitzvah is to be here, then as long as you're in a Chutz La'aretz, you're not here. Perhaps you'll need a good reason for that as well. The source in the Gemara, which potentially sheds most light on this question about the permissibility of leaving Eretz Yisrael even for a short amount of time, is the Gemara in Maseches Gittin and Daf Ayin Vav, which talks about how the yeshiva students in Eretz Yisrael and people from Chutz La'aretz used to come and learn in Eretz Yisrael. Right? The chutznik is not a new invention. And therefore they would come and learn for a while in Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and then their Eretz Yisrael chaverim would accompany them along the way, back home, north, of course, because they'd be going to Bavel. And the Gemara says they'd stop at the border. They'd stop at the boundary of Eretz Yisrael. They would, which the Gemara actually lists as Akko, that's part of the whole discussion as to where's the north in this respect. And they would go no further. And the reason why is because they're not going to go to Chutz La'aretz. They don't want to go to Chutz La'aretz. And the Tashbatz, one of the later Rishonim, says perhaps one could see in this Gemara an answer to our question. Because they're not going to live in Chutz La'aretz, they're just accompanying their chaverim. It's a little bit more, which itself one could almost say is a mitzvah, you know, to accompany them. But they didn't leave even just for a few moments. Sounds like even for a few moments is an issue. However, says the Tashbatz, it's not an ironclad proof because it could be that they were machmir on themselves as chiba of Eretz Yisrael, to show how beloved Eretz Yisrael is. As much as they love their friends, they love the land of Israel more, and if they have to choose, they'll stay at the border and wave goodbye from there. So that could be an issue of Midas Chassidus, not so much an absolute halachic issue of leaving just for a short amount of time. We should mention in conclusion, and we've seen a number of highlights, and as you can appreciate, there's plenty to talk on this topic. But an important point to consider is made by Moshe Feinstein, that's all in the Igros Moshe, in Chelek Evan Ezer. And that is, we see clearly in the Gemara that there is an issue to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Chutz La'aretz. But the Gemara never says that there is an Isser to live in Chutz La'aretz. You can deduce many statements about how it's much better to live in Israel, which it is. But in terms of a halachic problem, the halachic problem is to leave Eretz Yisrael and go to Chutz La'aretz. But there's no corresponding or restatement of that problem to be in Chutz La'aretz in the first place. But why is that so? I mean, if the halacha requires one to be in Eretz Yisrael, that should be as much a problem to be in Chutz La'aretz from the outset as it is to leave Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, a chiddush, but it seems to be the straightest line from the Gemara, and that is, there are two types of mitzvahs. There is a mitzvah called a mitzvah chiyuvis, an absolute obligation from the outset. And there is a mitzvah kiyumis, that is, well, whatever, as long as the person does that, he is fulfilling a mitzvah. But it's not a mitzvah that he's obligated to fulfill as a mitzvah. Says Rav Moshe, seemingly, the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah kiyumis. As long as one is in Eretz Yisrael, for every moment, he's fulfilling a mitzvah. But it's not a mitzvah as a mitzvah that one is obligated to fulfill if he's in Chutz La'aretz. If it was, it would be osur to the Chutz La'aretz, and that we don't find. So, these are some of the, again, discussions with regards to the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Important to talk about it once in a while, but also important to state. Everything we've said so far is from a halachic point of view, and that's important to understand it clearly, 100%. But there is an overarching question, aside from the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and that is that Eretz Yisrael is the land of the Jewish people. And that's true regardless of whether it's one of the Tariq mitzvahs, or how one categorizes it, or classifies it, etc. Which means that it has to be really on everyone's map as their ultimate destination. Everyone has their situation in terms of where they currently are, but if a person wipes it off the map as their ultimate destination, then they are contrary essentially to what the Torah is saying. Anyone who reads the Torah, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and doesn't get the message that ultimately Eretz Yisrael is where the Jewish people will and should be, should probably read it again in a language that they understand. So again, there are really two questions. There's the sugya, there's the Rambam and Ramban, etc. But there perhaps are good reasons, halachically, for a person not living in Eretz Yisrael. But there is no justifiable reason for a person not to have as their end destination Eretz Yisrael, and that's what we daven for the whole time, which should happen b'meher b'yamin. Amen.